of William McAllister, who assumed the title of Donald in 1852 on the death of his aunt, Mrs. Donald of Lyleston, who was life-rented in the estate entailed to him in 1824. He, William McAllister, was born on the 31st of October, 1797, and he lived until the 1st of May, 1880. He says, as I was had only one son, and as he was living so much on the continent and might not survive my daughters, I considered it prudent, and were such an event to take place, to break the entail so as to be able to leave the estate to my daughters, which I have effected in 1876. Now we have some of the memoirs of this William McAllister, who was an uncle to my grandmother, Margaret McAllister. He says now in his memoirs, my great-grandfather was born in Auchincarrick on the 18th of March, 1665, and died on the 5th of October, 1751. My grandfather, born on the 7th of May, 1716, he lived to the 31st of December, 1797. And my father, born on the 13th of April, 1762, died on the 26th of January, 1832. I was the second son, and my brother John, the young laird, was endowed with much talent and was an excellent scholar, being always at the head of his classes. In gymnastics, he was first rate and excelled in all sorts of athletic sports and was of a cheerful disposition. Every attention was paid to his education, calculating that one day he was destined to represent the family, my father holding two properties in Bonhill Parish, Auchincarrick and Mill of Halden, and two in Kilmarnock Parish, Blair Mayor and Auchinfrech. My mother, Catherine Donald of Lyleston, was the daughter of William Donald and Susan Allen, sister to the Reverend John Allen, Minister of Rue. From a reference to our family register, which goes back to 1600, it would appear that country lairds did not go far from home in search of wives, as a great many intermarried in the Donalds, as for example, the Ewings, the Yules, the Edmistons, the Buchanans, the Smiths, the Cummings, the Watsons, all belonging to Cardross, Rue or Roseneath parishes. And Robert Donald of Montblow, my great-uncle, provost of Glasgow in 1770, married his full cousin, Kate Donald. Most of these marriages took place from 1732 to 1794. As I, different from my brother, showed little inclination to study, and being a cadet and less fortunate in every way, very little attention or interest was taken regarding me, and I was continually told I should go abroad and push my way in the world. I was born on the 30th of October, 1797. And in our early days, we had a private tutor at home, Mr. Cahoon, and afterwards a Mr. McInnes. However, in 1808, we were sent to Greenock, the schools there being considered superior to any in the immediate neighborhood. After 2 years, my father purchased a small cottage there at a place called Holmes Croft, and my eldest sister Susan came and kept house for us, where we were very happy till my brother John caught a severe inflammation caused by overheating himself in cricket playing and died in 1811, when we all returned home to Auchincarra. As I was now considered the young laird, I was indulged in every way, and after a few months was sent to school in Dumbarton, which I attended every day, and which was distant from Auchincarra about 5 miles. When the weather was wet and roads bad, I was allowed to take the pony Pompey and rode to and from school. However, I disliked school and had no inclination to study except to learn a little French under Mr. Finlay. I made no progress, and many a time, in place of going to school, took a ride elsewhere and got well punished on returning home. This sort of life went on for a few years, and as during this time I was associated much with the tenants and servants, who would be continued telling me that as I was now the young laird and didn't require to bother myself by going to school, so that at last I got quite uncontrollable and unhappy, working mischief and receiving punishment. At last I determined to leave home and go abroad. To carry out my purpose, I went over to Greenock, where I had many relations and acquaintances, and requested Mr. Alexander Miller and James Ewing of Keppoch, cousins of my mother, to send me to their establishment in St. John's, Newfoundland. Their firm was Ewing, Miller and Company, and at St. John's it was called Miller Ferguson Company. I was content to go on any condition that they would prescribe, and I had only to get permission from my father and mother. When I returned to Auchincarra to get their consent, they at first refused, but when they saw I was determined to go, they reluctantly yielded to my desire and provided me with a handsome outfit. And in the spring of 1815, I sailed from the tail of the bank in one of the company's ships for St. John's, Newfoundland, and remained there until 1818. I had a very hard life there as the youngest slave of the establishment. During the 4 years I remained at St. John, where the inhabitants were for the most part Irish, there occurred 2 revolutionary movements when the town was in a state of anarchy. On the 24th of December 1818, I left St. John in a small vessel of about 500 tons for Liverpool, cutting our way out of the harbour, which was covered with ice. Our crew consisted of captain, mate, and 8 seamen. There were 3 passengers, James Fergus, my master, James Ewing Young of Keppoch, and myself. The cargo was cod liver oil and dried cod. After a stormy passage for 28 days, tossed in the Atlantic, wet and only snow to drink, 4 of the crew died of frostbite, and the sufferings of all were beyond description. On the 26th of January, 1819, we were cast ashore at Oban. Mr. Alexander Stevenson, who had been in our office in Newfoundland, took us in and looked after us. After 8 to 10 days, we were able to walk about, and in the course of a week, we undertook the journey to our respective homes. The ground was covered with snow to a depth of several inches, and at this season, no coach or conveyance from Oban to Inverary or Arracher was running, so we had to walk all the distance, taking a guide from place to place until we reached Helensburgh, where Fergus and Ewing took a small boat to Greenock, while I tramped to Lyleston. After being at home and finding I was a fish out of water, I went to Greenock and called on Mr. Alan Kerr, cousin of my mother's, of the firm of Alan Kerr and Company, and inquired if he had an opening for me. Several were available, but one in Trieste interested me. I embarked on the Comet on the 17th of April, 1819, and after a pleasant voyage of 40 days, we reached Leghorn. After spending a week there, went to Florence and Bologna. When in Florence, in company with Mr. Watt of Greenock and a Mr. Stokes of London, we called on Lord Byron. I proceeded to Ferrara and Venice, and by boat to Trieste. On the 17th of June, 1819, I met Mr. Moore, grandson of Sir George Moore of Bellamore, Isle of Man, and Speaker of the House of Keys, he being a leading partner in the well-known banking firm of Moore, Carrick and Company, Glasgow. Mr. Moore invited me to dine, as he had a small party that day at home. Before we sat down to dinner, a female infant was brought in and baptized, Georgina. After a lapse of 34 years, she became my wife, and God blessed us with two sons and three daughters, Duncan, born in 1854, George, 1855, Sarah, 1857, and Georgina, 1858, and Eliza, 1860. I was married in Trieste in 1822 to a Miss Anne Pagani, who died in 1824, after giving birth to my daughter Mary, who in 1843 married Count Napoleon Raspe at Ferrara. A few months after my arrival at Trieste, Mr. James Lang left for England and left me in charge of his business and didn't return for 2 years, having formed a partnership with a Mr. Basil Freeland. We traded in hemp, bought an old palace cheap from family Ludovico Ariosto, 1831 to 1832. State of unrest in the country. I applied to Lord Palmerston through Mr. John Park, our Consul General at Ancona, to be appointed H.M. Vice Consul at Ferrara, which office was conceded to me on the 3rd of January, 1832. Consequently, I had the British arms put over my door as a safeguard against any molestation. In that year, the French under General Oudinest took Ancona and the Austrians Bologna. Our citizens. In 1835, cholera broke out in Trieste and Venice, and in 1849, we assumed at Ferrara a republican government and then in 1848 and 9 the upheavals began, which were to lead ultimately to the unification of Italy and the expulsion of Austria from the Lombard plain. William McAllister, the British consul, was to become the saviour of the town, but this was not by force of arms, as might be supposed. Ferrara seceded itself from the Papal States and declared itself a republic, although Austrian troops in alliance with the Pope were in the city and held its fortress. The populace got out of hand. Many Austrians were killed and their consulate burnt. Marshal Haino, with 15,000 men, then descended on the city and threatened to sack it unless large sums of money were paid. Who should be sent out to parley with the irascible marshal but Senior William McAllister, the British consul? After several ultimatums and having raised a portion of the money demanded, the city was spared bombardment by the offer of the consul's personal promissory notes, the only pledge that would be accepted. Later, Count Troon, with 12,000 papal troops, restored order and the town was returned to the Austrians. In 1849, we assumed at Ferrara a republican government, and town and provinces were in a state of anarchy. The Austrian troops kept possession of the fortress they held. But ultimately, this led to the unification of Italy and the expulsion of Austria from the Lombard plain. William McAllister says, "I have lived among Italians for 32 years and can testify that I have ever found them a kind and disinterested people under a bad government." Becoming Laird of Lyleston, leaving his married daughter in Italy, William returned to Scotland, changed his name to William McAllister Donald, and having remarried in 1853, set about adding a large Victorian mansion to Lyleston, not dissimilar to Roebury, which was to be rebuilt at Orkney some years later. William and Georgina had four children, the eldest being the Reverend Duncan Donald, who became Minister of Moulin, Pitlochry. His daughter, Mary Theodora Dorothy, who lived until 1980, was able to boast that her grandfather was born in 1797. Her mother was Frances Strathy of Toronto, and her son, Patrick Barty, has been most kind in giving photographs for the record, which are greatly added to the completion of the genealogy of the McAllisters. William McAllister Donald, one of our most colourful ancestors, died in 1880 and was buried in Cardross Cemetery. His wife survived until 1896. Anne and James White had five children, two of their sons going to South America. John, who presumably returned to Scotland, married Isabella Black, and they in turn also produced five children. John and William both farmed, the former producing cheese at Kirkmabreck. Alan, who was a banker, was killed at Arras in 1917. Two daughters, Ethel and Stella, were spinsters. When Margaret Mackay visited the latter in her home at Stranraer in the late 1960s, she had become very eccentric, and Margaret found her home very eerie. In 1970, at the age of 88, she was murdered by her housekeeper. Patrick, who apparently didn't wish to farm and left that to his younger brother, James Alexander, went to Bahia in 1850. He married, but we do not know whom and how little else of him, and know little else of him other than that he died at Dollar in 1888. Catherine, the youngest child of John and Catherine, with her husband Walter Markham, had much to do with the supervision of the education of the Thompson boys, and later with their small income from Orkney. The responsibility of the farm fell to the youngest son, James Alexander, whose wife Mary bore him 9 children, all born at Western Auchincarrick. In 1870, they were living at Woodburn, which they built across the road in the mid-60s when Wester was severely damaged by fire. One suspects that the rebuilding of Lauston by his brother William encouraged them to build and move to a more substantial residence, where they both died of influenza in 1894. Their eldest son, John, the fifth so named in our genealogy, married Janet Wilson and moved to Dumfries. It's rumoured that he helped to dissipate the family wealth. Here he went into the potato business with his two sons, Archie and Jack, and developed many highly successful new strains. Their second son, John William, married Caroline Palmer, who after his death retired to Totnes, Devon, where she lived to the age of 94. She is survived there by her two daughters, the Mrs. Janet Mary and Nancy McAllister. James, the second son of James Alexander and Mary, took up sheep farming in New Zealand. Returning to Britain in 1901, there is an amusing account of his nephew, John William, who was living in London, meeting him at Tilbury and giving him an exhausting 2-day tour of London before putting him on the train for Scotland. Remaining unmarried, James preferred to end his days at Auchincarrick. Returning to Woodburn in 1920, where he lived until his death in 1923, with his younger unmarried brother William and the two younger unmarried sisters, Jessie and Susan. Margaret married Robert Brown, the schoolmaster down the road at Jamestown, and they built a house when he retired, named Applegarth after his home at Dumfries. Margaret bore him no less than 12 children, the one of most interest to us being Robina Wilson Brown, named after her father, since a brother named after him had died after her birth. She married James Kirkwood McClellan, having 2 children, Margaret Brown and William. When visiting Wester Auchincarrick in the autumn of 1982, Mr. Munn showed me a letter written to his mother in 1972 by a Margaret Brown Mackay, giving details of her ancestors, the Lairds of Auchincarrick. It was with much delight that I, Paul Tomlinson, had not known previously of her existence, that I managed to get in touch with her at her home in Wolverhampton, where I met her last month with her brother. It is to them that I am indebted for many of the photographs and for much of the information in this genealogy. Having completed her doctorate at Glasgow, she was invited by her uncle, Dr. William McAllister Brown, to assist him in his practice in Wolverhampton, which offer she accepted. And soon after going there, she was visited by a fellow graduate, Robert Lindsay Mackay. Her uncle was so impressed with this young man that he invited him to become his partner. Dr. Robert Lindsay Mackay married Dr. Margaret Brown McClellan in 1925, and eventually they took over her husband's practice. Retiring in 1961, Robert, who like his wife was awarded the OBE as well as an MC and bar in the 1914 war, devoted himself to the genealogy of the Mackays, subsequently publishing a history of the clan. A talented family, Margaret was a highly thought of JP for many years. There are 4 children, all with degrees. All 4 are married and have provided Margaret with 9 grandchildren. Sheila, an architect, lives with her family in California. Mary, a doctor with hers in Tasmania. Alan and Murray remain in England. Robert and Margaret, like their children, traveled extensively before Robert's death in 1981. Margaret still does. In their youth, Margaret and Bill McClellan cycled all round Loch Lomond, constantly visiting their grandfather at Applegarth by the River Leven at Ballagh, and their great aunts and uncle at Woodburn. Many a time has Margaret accompanied her McAllister relations to Bon Hill Church, which has featured so much in our history, and where William, Jessie and Susan donated two stained glass windows in memory of their parents. Either on foot or, if the weather was fine, in a hired carriage, Susan and Jessie enjoy their outings by carriage, delighting to go and partake of tea when invited to Ballagh Castle. Susan, the last surviving child of James Alexander and Mary, only died in 1948. It's interesting to note that my great-grandfather, John McAllister Thompson, died in 1880 at the age of 50. His first cousin, Susan McAllister, survived him by 68 years. Susan willed the only remaining Auchincarragh property, Woodburn, to her one living nephew, Archibald McAllister, who had married Jean Beck. Sad to relate, although the family moved into the house, they found it too lonely for their liking, so it was regretfully sold, the last remaining link of a family that had been there for hundreds of years. This is quoted from notes of Paul Tomlinson's of Port Hope, Ontario. Further notes of Paul Tomlinson's about the McAllisters are interesting, and I'm now recording some of those. Amongst the many roots we have in Scotland, he says about the McAllisters, one grows firmly from a corner of Dumbartonshire in the area of Bon Hill, Jamestown, Ballagh and Cardross, just north of the Clyde, where it begins to widen out into the Firth. One of our great-great-grandmothers was a member of a large family, all of whom had been born and bred in this part of the world, within a short distance of Loch Lomond, and with Ben Lomond distinctly in view. The McAllisters had been established in the parish of Bon Hill since 1600, the earliest documented knowledge being a few charter which was in the possession of Margaret Mackay's mother, Robina Wilson Brown, although it is believed that they had been there for a long time prior to this. At Lanark in Menteith, 30th of June 1616, translated from the Latin, few charter by James Haldin of Glenalgis, now Gleneagles, with consent of Margaret Murray, his wife, to William McKinley, alias MacIntillure of Blair na Hill, commonly called Blair Nile, and Christian McAllister, his wife, of half the 40 shilling lands of Blair na Hill, commonly called Blair Nile, in the parish of Kilmaronnock, barony of Haldane and sheriffdom of Perth. All the lairds of Auchincarragh, the McAllisters' homes, were christened John. We can trace six of them through our genealogy, the eldest of them being born in 1665. His son John, born in 1716, was a portioner, that is, someone who had been willed a share in the income of an estate of Blair Vault, Auchincarragh. His son John, born in 1762, married Catherine, daughter of William Donald of Lyleston, and Susan Allen, sister of the Reverend John Allen, minister of Rue. This was a union of two clans which had separated in the 13th century. The Donalds had purchased Lyleston from the noble family in 1708. When the entail was broken in 1890 by the Reverend Duncan Donald, It was sold back to Captain Noble of the same family. The main house with its mid-Victorian addition, which I, Paul, visited in 1982, had been converted into several flats. Miss Elizabeth Donald, whom we believe to be a cousin of John McAllister Thompson, befriended his widow, to whom she bequeathed several items of furniture, together with a Stuart silhouette and details of many Stuart tombstones at Rue. They are said to be relatives. Great Aunt Jean McAllister Thompson remembers being in awe of Miss Donald, with whom she went to stay with her mother near Greenock. Breakfast included large bowls of porridge would be sent to their bedroom, as Jean detested porridge. Both bowls had to be eaten by her mother Fanny so as not to offend their hostess. I, Paul, visited Auchincarrick in 1980. There are three farms: Wester Auchincarrick, now farmed by the Munns; Mid Auchincarrick, farmed and owned by David B. Bilsland, in whose family it's been for about 60 years; and Easter Auchincarrick, and the last McAllister property, Woodburn. Coming up the road in a northeasterly direction from Barnhill, Woodburn is situated on your left, with just beyond it on your right, Wester. This was originally a one-story house, but after a fire in the 1860s was rebuilt with two stories. At this time, James McAllister built Woodburn, to which he and his family moved, both his wife Mary and he dying there of influenza in 1894. Further up on either side of the road are the old red sandstone buildings of Mid Auchincarrick. The house rebuilt in 1782 is on the right-hand side. David Bilston pointed with pride to the old rose bush said to be the white Jacobite rose. He told me that he understood that the McAllisters had been at Auchincarrick since Bannockburn, and that they had acquired additional land, including Mid and Easter, in return for favours done to the Grahams of Montrose, to whom had been granted the Buchanan estates in this area. This was of a particular interest to us, as my wife was a Graham, and we were on our way to Arran, where her parents had lived. The present Duke's sister, Lady Jean Ford, told me that some family hid one of the Grahams, and that this could be the connection. I later wrote to her to see whether she could substantiate this, and she replied, "The story about a member of the family being hidden in Barnhill or Dumbarton, I think, was in papers that my nephews had at Auchmere. I have asked him about it, and he says a lot of papers went to the Historical Manuscripts Commission in Edinburgh. Certainly he has not got them now, as my brother deposited most of them in Edinburgh." Continuing up Auchincarrick Road, Easter is on the left-hand side. From the census of 1851, we find that James was living at Wester with his wife, six children and three servants, farming 110 acres and employing two men. At Mid Auchincarrick, Margaret McAllister, aged 50, and her sister Mary, aged 35, both unmarried, were farming 30 acres and employing four men. Unfortunately, we do not know how or if they were related. Of Easter Auchincarrick, we have little information other than a tombstone at Barnhill Cemetery erected by John McAllister in memory of two brothers, Peter and Illegible. Auchincarrick East, 1870. At Blair Vault, David Bilsland wrote to me, "Blair Vault Burn crosses the road as you come up from Barnhill. It is the march between Auchincarrick and Woodside." I don't know whether this Woodside should be Woodburn. "There are the foundation of two houses on that side of the burn, and I believe occupied about 100 years ago. On the edge of the heather, there are the foundations of another house on the Auchincarrick side of the burn, and I believe they would be Blair Vogt. The McAllisters appear to have been a thriving and prosperous family, until towards the end of the 19th century, when the Lairds seem to have lost money and sold their properties, until only Woodburn remained in the family. We are interested in the McAllisters through John and Catherine's third daughter, Jean, our great-great-grandmother, born on the 14th of December, 1801, at Wester, as were all their children. She married Henry Sinclair Thompson, who at that time was captain of the ship Othello, registered at Liverpool. Henry Sinclair Thompson came from the Orkney Islands, Hearthstone at South Ronaldsay. This is the location of another firm family root, since six separate ancestors of about the time we are speaking were Orcadians, and probably the number was higher. It's interesting to speculate how these two would have met, presumably at Greenock, where Catherine McAllister had numerous cousins in various shipping concerns. The only memento we have of Jean McAllister Thompson is one letter that she wrote to her brother, the Vice Consul of Ferrara, we presume. "My dear William," this is written from Garsdyke, July 14th, 1820. "With pleasure I sit down to write you a few lines, along with some newspapers Uncle John has collected for you. He would have wrote you with them, but desires me to make his apology, as he has been complaining very much of a pain in his leg, which has distressed him for some time, but that he would write you by next opportunity in answer to your last. He, Mrs. D, father, mother, and Susan were to go a fine jaunt last week to the Falls of Clyde and Hamilton. I have been staying here with Mrs. Campbell for a week. I go home on Wednesday. Miss Campbell is to accompany me. I have been very gay since I came to town, out from morning till evening. I see your old friend Miss Pringle very often, and Miss Kerr's are dull still. John made application for his father's place, but has been disappointed. Mrs. Miller has a daughter a few weeks since. She was named after Aunt Ewing. I remember nothing new, nothing but yeomen in every place. Patrick has joined them and has got a horse from Uncle John. Mr. Douglas is one also and looks remarkably well in his dress uniform. We have been looking for Mr. Lang for months past and are now afraid we won't have the pleasure of seeing him, as we have not heard anything of him for a long time. I am sure you must be tiring very much for him now, as he has been so long away. Jean McClay is still very ill, and I am afraid there is but little hope of her recovery. Miss McClay, it is said, is just yearning to be married to Mr. Rainey, a young man who has come to assist her father with the overseeing of the query. Her sister has been in England for some time past. Miss Campbell desires to be remembered to you just now from Mr. McClay, and hope of hearing from you soon. I remain, my dear William, your affectionate sister, Jean McAllister." This letter was addressed to Mr. McAllister, care of James Lang, Esquire, Trieste. Uncle John was presumably Catherine McAllister's brother, and Patrick was Jean's younger brother. Although her brothers had had tutors, the same education was not given to the daughters, hence the bad spelling. Henry and Jean's four children, Catherine Bruce, who herself died at 17, John McAllister, Henry Sinclair, and the babe and Jane had to bear the loss at quite a tender age of both parents. Their father in 1838 and their mother in 1837. The circumstances of the latter's death are vivid still in their grandmother's letter to their aunt, Anne McAllister White of Kirkmilbreck, dated the 28th of August 1837. The mill of Haldon disappeared some years ago, the area now being a housing estate, with it vanished Haldon Cottage, a red sandstone house which William McClellan says he well remembers from his youth. According to David Bilsland, an old cottage is still occupied on the outskirts of the village. The church records tell us that on the 21st of March 1836, a lawful daughter, Janet Scott, was born to Peter McAllister and Agnes Lindsay of Mill of Balloch. They would be Jeanie's neighbours and presumably the Peter mentioned in her mother's letter. At this time, John McAllister owned two properties in Bonhill Parish, the Auchencarrach Stonefields Farms and the Mill of Haldon or Balloch, and two in Kilmaronic Parish, Blair Nile, still shown on ordnance maps, and Auchenfech. In the possession of Elizabeth Betty Patterson is a letter written to John McAllister Thompson, aged 7, to his Aunt Anne, Mrs. White, at Jaffard in faultless copperplate and sealed in black wax with the crest used by the Thompsons, a rampant lion with the motto, "Go on, take care." This letter was written from Haldon Cottage on the 22nd of December, 1837. "My dear aunt, as this is the first letter I have written, I hope you will excuse me if I make any mistakes. Aunt Susan is going to leave us for a little while to be with you. We will be very dull without her, so I hope you will not detain her long. Aunt Thompson and Cousin Janet came here on Wednesday and are going to remain for some time. Henry is beginning to write upon his slate and hopes to be able to write you soon. Grandma was at Alloa seeing Aunt Kitty. Uncle Patrick came home with her and stayed for a night. I have begun to read history and like it very well. I am also very fond of arithmetic, and Mr. McGregor has promised to Papa to come and examine me on the multiplication table, which I think I can save. I hope I shall be able to write you a better letter soon. Give my kind love to my little cousin James, and believe me to be your affectionate nephew, John Thompson." There are no shortage of relatives to look after. There were no shortage of relatives to look after the four orphans when their father died shortly afterwards. Both boys went to Glasgow University, and the baby, Anne Jane, whom we have seen, throve on her bottle and spent part of the night in her grandmother's bosom, seems to have been brought up in the Orkneys, where her brothers also spent occasional holidays. When her brother John entered the ministry, Anne kept house for him at Pennycook and Stirling until she married Captain, later Major General William Patterson, and John McAllister married his sister, Frances Ann Patterson. To John on Orkney, his grandmother wrote from Auchencarrach in the 24th of July, 1847. This letter gives quite a few leads to family connections of this time. His grandmother's hopes that Henry would not become a farmer or merchant clerk were, alas, not to be fulfilled. He was to become a sheep farmer in Western Otago, New Zealand, where, although married, he died without issue. Mr. Malcolm was Walter, written writer of The Signet, lawyer of North Berwick, who married Mrs. McAllister's youngest daughter, Catherine. The baby, his eldest daughter, we know later as Kate Russell. Anne Jean was living with Miss McAllister's eldest daughter, Susan, who was married to a Mr. Turner and living at York. Unfortunately, we know little of her later life. She died there in 1881. Jaffa was the family residence of the Whites at Ballantrae, John White having married Mrs. McAllister's second daughter, Anne. Mrs. James was Mary Thomas, married to the fourth son, James Alexander. Mrs. Donald was Catherine McAllister's sister-in-law from Lyleston. In both letters, she had pointedly mentioned the fact that Mrs. Donald had her own carriage, something to which perhaps the McAllisters did not aspire and of which she was envious. The Donalds later died without male issue, for the lordship of Lyleston passed to William, at that time Mrs. McAllister's eldest surviving son. This is the Uncle William mentioned in the letter, a most colourful character who changed his surname to Donald in order to inherit. John, the young laird born in 1796, was, according to his brother William, born the following year, endowed with much talent and excellent scholar, having always ahead of his class. This is, we have recorded it.